Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The Tulsa Oratorio Chorus has already been quite busy with concert appearances with the Tulsa Symphony for their Benjamin Britten War Requiem and John Williams Home Alone film score concert. But now they're on to something completely different. The chorus is presenting an evening of sacred and seasonal secular Russian choral classics for their opening concert of the year. The Russian choral tradition of the late 19th and early 20th century is one of the richest and most serene experiences of the choral repertoire. The concert will feature music from Sergei Rachmaninoff, along with lesser-known but equally talented composers of that same time, Pavel Chesnikov and Igor Drozdov. The concert will also feature an original composition by the chorus's artistic director and conductor, Tim Sharp, along with the Ukrainian bell carol, known more familiarly as the Carol of the Bells. The concert takes place tomorrow evening at 7:30 in the beautiful resonant atmosphere of the Holy Family Cathedral, which should add to the evening's luster. Tim Sharp joins me today to talk about the program and this rich singing tradition. Tim Sharp, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Rich. Great to be with you.
Tell us a little bit about this program. It's been a busy season already for the Tulsa Oratorio Chorus. You had to sing your portion of the War Requiem, which is a monumental work. And now you're coming back with all of this incredible Russian choral music. Tell us a little bit about this program and how it came about.
Well, as you know, our Tulsa Oratorio Chorus is a repertory company in that we're doing the War Requiem. We do the great masterworks of Bach and Handel and so on. And this year, I wanted to offer something that's great from the choral tradition, but different than things that we've done in the past. So this is really sort of cherry-picking on my part some of the great Russian liturgical and secular pieces from great works such as Rachmaninoff's Vespers, but also liturgical works that are not that well known that were a part of the Russian Orthodox Church. So this is a program of all a cappella Russian material that really exploits the choir and all of its wonderful qualities with the low basses singing this Russian literature and the sopranos singing in 3- and 4-part harmony in the high end of their register. This is the material that's made that music so compelling and so interesting in the choral tradition. And so I put together a program of all that kind of literature for this season.
Of course, you have another actor at play as well, the wonderful acoustics of Holy Family Cathedral.
Exactly.
How important is that for this music?
Well, it was exactly the match that I had in mind because Tulsa Oratorio Chorus does move around from venue to venue in Tulsa. This was the perfect match to me of architecture, acoustic space, and this literature, because there's a several-second reverberation in that cathedral space.
I think it's about 4 to 5, actually. I've measured it before.
Measured it. Okay, well, we're going to exploit every bit of it. As I told the chorus, I said, we've been rehearsing this where we rehearse, of course, in a fairly dry space. And I said, believe me, this concert's going to be much longer than our rehearsal time because I'm going to let those chords ring in that room. And plus also because it is a liturgical space and that is such a beautiful cathedral, so well appointed and all the iconography that's around, that will be part of the imagery, of course, that much of the music is talking about. So it's a great match.
Now, you mentioned this sort of as being a seasonal concert. Now, these are not necessarily Christmas pieces, but they're pieces that are that occur throughout the liturgical year in the old Orthodox tradition, right?
That's exactly right. The thing about Christmas, of course, this season that's coming up, the truth is, in the liturgical sense of the word, this season celebrates, in the Christmas tradition with Christians, it celebrates the birth of the Messiah. Well, that's a full story. That's not just about Ricky Bobby's preferring the baby Jesus in Talladega Nights. The idea is this is the full life of this Messiah. And so with that in mind, the rich liturgical tradition of the Russian Orthodox Church, I've pulled from the Psalms that also speak to what that story in its fullness is about. So there is the birth there, but there also is aspects of the full life. And of course, the Bogorodica that celebrates the Virgin Mary. So it does have that flavor centrally into the programming.
Now, there are several settings of the Bogorodica, which is Rejoice, O Virgin. How important is that text? Why use that text several times?
Well, that of course, Mary is central to the life of the Orthodox Church and the Roman Catholic Church. So because of that space and because we are at Holy Family, I wanted to do two settings of that particular text, one being the Rachmaninoff text that's been there for a century, but also I wanted to do a modern setting of that, which is the Arvo Pärt setting, which Stephen Cleberry at King's College, Cambridge, actually commissioned for their Lessons in Carols service. So that's a little attempt on my part to, I think, match again the space to the text that we're singing.
And what's important about the text? Tell us about the text and what are the singers singing about?
Well, they're rejoicing in Mary, the mother of Christ. Okay. So that part of the seasonal story, I think, is highlighted in that particular text.
Now, the first version you'll be doing is Sergei Rachmaninoff's version from the Vespers, which was originally almost an overnight ceremony, right? That's how it was originally written to be, right?
Right. It's the all-night vigil. And, of course, this, again, talking about the full story, that is really an Easter work. That is a work that goes on at the great vigil, the great Easter vigil. And the word is Vespers, but it really is the all-night vigil. And this is sort of the high point. The Bogorodica and the Gloria are the high points of the middle of that service. So I've kind of filleted the all-night vigil and brought those two pieces out of that to be on this program.
Well, let's hear a little bit of this music by Rachmaninoff. What's important in performing this particular piece? What you try to keep in mind with a choir? What you want audiences to think about as they hear this?
Well, it's not only is it gorgeous writing, it's based on some important things. It's based upon the historic Russian chant that Rachmaninoff was pulling from. In fact, Chesnokov, Krichininoff, Isakov, these Russian composers really did go back into their world of chant, not unlike composers did in other traditions when they went back to Gregorian chant. Yeah. The Russian composers...
How many composers use Dies Irae?
Exactly.
Right? Exactly.
You
know,
the
old medieval melody.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what Russians were doing in their tradition. So Rachmaninoff pulls from that chant. The chant is in there from the Russian Orthodox tradition, but also you have these symbolic elements of the low, low basses. I think choirs around the world know, people know, that if you want to hear low Cs and low B flats, the people that exploited that were the Russian composers. And we have that in this music. Our basses are loving swimming in those low, low, low notes. And I want everyone to hear those notes, which they will hear in the concert. So you have the low, low men, which really anchors, theologically, it anchors the piece on earth. The Rachmaninoff, Chesnokov, when they write that low in, they're symbolizing that we are here on earth. But to contrast that, those composers put the treble voices on the very, very high part of their range, and that represents heaven. And then you have this chant telling the story in the middle. So it has this theological heaven and earth symbolism going on in the architecture of the writing, and I want the audience certainly to hear that as we see.
And that wasn't common to one composer. This was almost like a school.
It was a school. Yeah, it was a school. And Chesnokov, I would say, was the prime leader of that school. He was the great church composer.
Was it liturgically led where the authorities were saying this is the way music has to be, or was this an inspiration of the composers?
It was liturgically led, yeah. It was really inherited. Not unlike Bach inherited many of the things that he just took into his compositions. This was a school. This was a school of writing that existed for the church for a long period of time that these composers came into. And they nurtured each other. They mentored each other in this school.
Well, let's hear a little bit of Rachmaninoff's Rejoice, O Virgin, the Bogorodica, as sung by the Robert Shaw Chorale, which will be, this will be one of the pieces that the Tulsa Oratorio Chorus present this Friday evening at 7:30 at Holy Family Cathedral in their program titled Russian Choral Classics.
Thank you.
That's music by Rachmaninoff, which will be performed by the Tulsa Oratorio Chorus this Friday evening at 7:30 at Holy Family Cathedral in a program devoted to Russian choral classics. When we think of Russian, we think of something that doesn't really slip off the tongue and doesn't really slip off the tongue in a singing way very easily, sort of like German is a special technique. Mm-hmm. What are the techniques for singing Russian? Now, I know you're singing some in English and some in Russian. What are the special techniques?
Well, the vowels have their uniquenesses, and there's some consonant sounds that we do not have in our language, and they are certainly unique to Russian. So those were the challenges for us. We are doing some of the pieces in Russian, so we had to have, of course, we've got a Russian community, actually, of course, in Tulsa. So we've drawn upon friendly folks to help us come in and give us some diction coaching. So we've really worked on the Russian to be as true to it as we can be. But I also edited several of the pieces and translated so that we could sing English. We really want this concert to have the flavor, but I also want the words to be immediately understood. So I've done translations that we will sing to some of the pieces.
And you've
added
a number of these pieces, right?
I did. Yeah, I've been working on this program for over a year. My design there, again, is to make it accessible and to bring it more into a mainstream, I think. My hope is that others will, I'm going to share these arrangements with others beyond our concert. And my hope is that others will be able to use these actually liturgically in a service so that it's not just a historic piece, but something that that people find useful. The melodies and the harmonies are so beautiful that I would hate for them to be removed simply because we are singing in a language that is truly remote for most people to listen to.
Remote, and it's also difficult to sing for a traditional English-speaking person. It just doesn't flow off the tongue very well.
It doesn't. And the interesting thing about the Arvo Pärt setting of the Bogorodice Djevo is that it flies. So not only are we singing this Russian, we're having to sing it very, very fast. And that's taken a lot of drilling to be able to accomplish.
Now, we heard a little bit of Rachmaninoff's version. It's very ethereal. It's very... Well, in many ways, it sounds like a piece written for the church. How does Arvo Pärt's version contrast?
Pärt's is more celebrative. It's very joyful, and it's fun, actually, to sing because it does. It's almost like a tongue twister. It goes by so fast. Pärt's is less than a minute long, whereas Rachmaninoff's is about 4 minutes long. But Pärt dismisses this text very, very quickly. In fact, I talked to Stephen Clewberry at King's College when he commissioned this piece years ago, and he told me how much he had to pay for the commission, and that translated out to an astronomical amount of money per note, basically, and how much Pärt received for this commission. But it has actually become a very favorite of people. It's heard often throughout the season. Now,
you have the same text written for two very different occasions. One would be for an Easter mm-hmm. vigil. Mm-hmm. The other is written for the Christmas vigil, if you will.
Right.
It's sort of interesting you can use the text in both ways.
Yeah, and I think, again, it goes back to my desire to broaden this season, not just to think about the infant, but to think more about the full message. I mean, we think about the number of folks in this season. I was talking to my chorus the other night about how many Messiah performances that we've seen this year particularly. But that is the point. The Messiah is not just the Christmas portion. It gives the full life of this season. And I had that in mind, let's not just use seasonal on this program, but let's think about the full life and the meaning of what that life means in faith. So that's the sculpture I was doing. But I also wanted to have some secular pieces in there, which is the In Winter and the Ukrainian Bell Carol, which everyone knows whether they know it or not.
It's the Carol of the Bells.
The Carol of the Bells,
yeah.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about the Ukrainian Bell Carol. How did it start? Is it a traditional piece? Is there actually a composer of it, actually?
Or? No, it's an anonymous piece. It's a folk tune that is traced back to the Ukraine. And it's really, you mentioned that chant, it's really a simple minor third kind of variation. Mm-hmm. Dum-ba-da-dum, ba-da-da-dum. That's just three notes. And that then becomes a variation and a doubling on itself. So it's a very simple little tune that was expanded out. And what I did with that one is I took those notes that we are used to hearing, and I basically substituted texts from carols that we sing normally at this season. They're little snippets. You know, it's Hark How the Bells, Sweet Silver Bells, and so on. I took that idea and said, used Joy to the World and just actually incorporated, because if you look at the original text of the Ukrainian carol that everyone sings, it's not a narrative. It's just a lot of little snippets of ideas about bells. And so I thought, I can gild this lily
a
bit.
So what was the original text? Because I'm thinking of Ward Swingle's version, right, which was just, you know, just quote libet on bells.
It's a quote libet on bells. Yeah. You're exactly right. It's just celebrating the idea that bells sound at this time of year. And I decided to enhance that a little bit more and put some of the themes of the season into it. So it's a license, but it's not out of line for, I think, for what many of these carols over the years have become. They've been adapted and played upon.
Now, there are so many arrangements of Carol of the Bells or the Ukrainian Bell Carol. Mm-hmm. Is there a sort of a central version that everybody's going off of that's actually written, or is it just a matter of this folk melody, I'm going to do it however I want to do it?
It's a good question, and I listened to lots of recordings to see if I could find something new in it, and they all follow the same line. I can't find anything that's... Now, what I did on mine, though, is I took my lead from Mannheim Steamroller. They have a fun Carol of the Bells, and it really plays with the listener. It plays on the idea that you already know what this piece is. So let's play with your imagination a little bit.
Change the meter.
Exactly.
Extend the meter. Yeah,
exactly right. Yeah. So what I did was I basically got rid of the meter, because the meter is dun da da dun 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 in three. Dun da da dun. So I tried to destroy the idea that three is on top of this. And so you have to come in here to see if it worked or not.
And you're now messing with an important theological message here, Tim.
That's right.
I mean, the three is the Trinity, right?
Well, I didn't think that way in it, but you're right. I could be it could be heresy. I don't think it's going to be heresy with bells, so I think we're okay.
My guest today is Tim Sharp, the artistic director and conductor of the Tulsa Oratorio Chorus. TOC presents Russian Choral Classics Friday evening at 7:30 at the Holy Family Cathedral. Some great acoustics for some great acoustic a cappella choral music. And that is, of course, one of the great things about this music. It's a cappella choir alone, and just a choir in a resonant space. And that really will add to a lot to the beauty of the evening, I would think.
It does. We love collaborating, of course, with other ensembles, Tulsa Symphony and so on, as you mentioned, with the Britain. We just did the Home Alone. We got to be the chorus for the film that they did. But this time, it's just the chorus. It's our voices. It's all unaccompanied. And I have positioned the 80 voices in the Tulsa Oratorio Chorus into 10 double quartets. So instead of being people who sing in rows, we're actually now double quartets, and I've stationed them throughout the front of the church, the altar area at Holy Family. So what we're going to be able to achieve on this concert is the ideal of blend that you would want with any choir. Often you hear choir, all the sopranos are together, all the altos are together. In this concert, I've actually got double quartets that are mixed.
Now, how does that affect the acoustic?
It makes for the most homogeneous sound that you could possibly get. Rather than you hearing a whole wall of sound coming from sopranos that you clearly identify as the soprano, the sopranos are, of course, mixed in all the other quartets, as are the tenors, altos, and basses. So what you get is this homogeneity of sound, which is the true choral instrument that you want. You want a blended sound that says, oh, I don't hear one thing, I hear a unit. That is the ultimate for any of us in blend. And with this arrangement, I'm going to be able to achieve that with this glorious music.
Yeah, and of course, when you separate them in a very resonant atmosphere, that just adds to the resonance, too. So you're talking, instead of a 4 or 5 second delay, it's going to be even a little longer, I would think.
It's going to be rich. It really will be. And what you want there is what Chestnikov talked about. Chestnikov, in his book on conducting that he wrote, talked about nuance in a cappella singing. So what we're going to be able to show is a lot of this internal nuance that is there because of, again, it's just us, and it's got this wonderful acoustic that we're going to be able to exploit crescendos and decrescendos. And, of course, the harmonies are just wonderful. One of the things about this music, it is not very polyphonic. You get maybe a snippet of counterpoint here and there, but for the most part, it's all homophonic chords. So you can imagine in that room with that kind of reverberation what those chords are going to be able to sound like.
Well, we have some more music to play that you'll be singing on the program, but before I want to mention the piece that you actually composed. You actually composed a piece for this program called Fos Hilaron. Tell us a little bit about this piece.
It's one of the texts in the Book of Common Prayer, the Anglican Book of Common Prayer. It's one of my favorite texts because it says, we have come together at the evening of the day to basically put the day to rest and to celebrate the gift of the day. And it says, and we come together to do that with happy voices. It actually uses the words with our happy voices. So I love that idea and that image. It's always been one of my favorite texts, along with the Magnificat and the Nunc Dimittis that are part of the Evensong standard texts. So I set this text when I lived in Cambridge. I was there for a year, and I was singing in King's College Chapel choir. And you can't help but live and love that tradition when you're sitting in those choir stalls. And so I thought, I'm going to try my hand at this. And so I read that text and worked that text, and that resulted in this Fos Hilaron that we will start the program with. Now, it's the one non-Russian composer that would be me on the composer on the list on the program. But the reason for its placement is, in a way, it is Evensong. The program starts at 7:30. This will actually frame the evening, saying, here's the music that is to come. So I wanted to add that piece to this program for that reason.
You have another sort of seasonal piece by Pavel Chesnikov called In Winter. Is this this is obviously a secular piece, correct?
It is. Chesnikov wrote 500 pieces, choral pieces. Amazing.
I don't think
output.
Most of him is being a liturgical
it
composer.
It is. Yeah. And this is a rare secular piece that he wrote. It was the text came from a Russian poet, and it's secular. It really is the metaphor of winter being the death to the year. It's the dying of the year. And Chesnikov used and played off of that idea in this metaphor, although it really is a secular text, but that was the imagery that he was using. You know, Chesnikov, because of the Bolshevik Revolution, he stayed in Russia. He didn't come to the United States like Rachmaninoff and others did. He stayed there, and his works were not even allowed to be sung in public for a great part of his life. They, even when his textbook on conducting was published, all of his examples that had religious words, they eliminated the words, and they just put nonsense syllables there. So Chesnikov did write some secular pieces, and he is known for these pieces because if he was going to have a reputation of any worth in those days, it had to be in secular because
it was the only
church,
thing it could be sung in the Soviet Union.
Absolutely.
Right?
The church wasn't recognized. And it was really the kiss of death for him to be known as a church composer if he was going to be anything greater. To contrast that, Rachmaninoff, of course, wrote in other forms, and he also left the Soviet Union. So we know Rachmaninoff very, very well. People don't know Chesnikov that well, and he is the splendid composer, every bit so to me, that Rachmaninoff was.
Well, we have an example of Chesnikov before we hear it. This is two pieces that will be right after your piece, and it's the Introit for Christmas and Salvation is Created. Were these, again, just liturgical pieces for various times during the year?
They were.
Obviously, the Introit for Christmas was
yes.
at Christmas time.
yes. And it's a big celebrative piece as well. It's very fanfarish, and it uses those three elements that I talked about heaven, middle, and earth. It uses those kind of treble and bass imagery. But the Salvation is Created, this is probably the best-known piece of Chesnikov because it was actually discovered in 1913 by the St. Olaf Choir Minnesota fame.
Yeah.
And they actually performed that piece as early as 1913, and it was published in the United States. So that piece got a foothold really unlike any other, and it probably is the best known of those liturgical works because it did get that kind of launch here in the United States outside of Chesnikov's home writing of it. So that piece is very, very special. It will remind anyone that hears it, it's in the same ilk of the Rachmaninoff Vespers. It's got the same elements to it, but it's just got, a richness and a poignancy. And it's got a formula that these other pieces have as well. They have this wonderful introduction that goes on for a while, and then a little bit of snippets of counterpoint, and then it comes to a declamatory statement at the end that is usually a scripture piece. And this one does that, but it declares Alleluia at the end. And it's my favorite piece on the program. In fact, we may even reprise that piece at the end of the program. It's just that special.
All right, well, let's hear a little bit of Salvation Is Created here. This is the music of Chesnokov, and it'll be performed by the Tulsa Oratorial Chorus this Friday evening. Music by Chesnokov, one of several composers featured on Russian Choral Classics by the Tulsa Oratorio Chorus this Friday evening at 7:30 at Holy Family Cathedral. Some beautiful, beautiful Russian music sung a cappella in a wonderful resonant environment. Now, you threw out something just a moment ago that I did not know about you, that you sang in the King's College, Cambridge.
Yes.
And that means you probably sang the little Festival of Nine Lessons and Carols program that you hear all the world over.
Well, I tell you, Rich, it's one of those moments in your life that, you know, it's just an incredible moment. But David Wilcox, of course, who we all will be hearing his descants here and very soon, David Wilcox and John Rutter were my sponsors when I studied in Cambridge. And I had written for tickets. I actually sang in there's a choir that sings on Monday. The boys and the men of King's College have Mondays off. And they have a special choir that's formed by Simon Brown that sings on Mondays because the tourists keep coming. Yeah. You know, they want to hear something. And so that's actually the choir that I got to sing in. I auditioned for it and sang during my year at Cambridge in that Monday evening choir. But as you said, the thing that if you're in Cambridge, you want to go to the Lessons and Carols service on Christmas Eve. So I wrote to Stephen Clearberry and if I could get tickets. And about 2 weeks before the service in the mail came tickets for my wife and daughter, tickets number 001, 002, and 003. And I still have those ticket stubs. And when David Wilcox was walking out from the great curtain there, and he was coming from the other side at the recessional at the end, when they sing one of his descants, and there's David Wilcox walking out, he was walking, looking straight ahead. And then when he got to my aisle, he just darted his head over to the left, and he looked and winked at me at that point. And I knew my tickets had come from David, and I have just such great memories of being in that service. But that's sort of, again, when I say the Fossileron, that is definitely in my mind and heart with this program because of the memory of that service. And, you know, at 3 o'clock in England, in Cambridge, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on Christmas Eve, it is getting dark.
Yeah, it's in the gloaming. Yeah.
That's where it starts. So we will start our evensong with that piece that came from Cambridge, although I'm then immediately going to Russia at that point.
We hope a lot of people come out to the event Friday evening. Tim, as always, it's a pleasure. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Rich.
Tim Sharp is the artistic director and conductor of the Tulsa Oratorio Chorus, which will be performing this work you're hearing along with many others in the Russian Choral Classics Concert tomorrow evening at 7:30 at Holy Family Cathedral. You can learn more about the concert at tulsachorus.com. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.